Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. I'll be your host for today, Deep Geek. Today is a very special show for me today because I'm joined today on the phone by Jonathan Bartlett. Jonathan is a web developer at New Medio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as well as being an adjunct instructor at Tulsa Community College. He is the author of Programming from the Ground Up, A Guide to Learning Linux Assembly Language, a book in use at Princeton University as a textbook, which aims at making good programmers better programmers by giving them a deeper appreciation for how the CPU works. He is also the author of numerous articles at IBM.com's Developer Works. Hi, John. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so glad you could join us today. John, in addition to being a web developer and being an instructor, John is also a PS3 hacker, and I'm always interested in talking to people about exotic hardware, and so that's why.
The PS3 is pretty exotic. It's got an architecture unlike any other I've seen.
Well, John, you know, perhaps not all of our listeners are, you know, real CPU enthusiasts. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences in architecture between the Cell and the more popular Wintel CPUs?
Yeah, as you said, the PlayStation 3 has a processor on it called the Cell, which was developed jointly by IBM and Sony.
Uh-huh.
And historically, each chip, processor chip, has one core on it.
Uh-huh.
So each CPU can only execute one stream of code at a time. You know, it can alternate quickly between streams, so it feels like it's doing multiple tasks at once. But really, each CPU was only doing one thing at a time.
Uh-huh.
With multi-threading, there was some sharing where you could have some streams going simultaneously. But finally, they've started building what's called multi-core processors, where you actually have multiple independent processing units on each chip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Intel does that by simply taking the same chip and replicating it multiple times. So it's basically the same architecture as if you had multiple independent chips, but just all put together on the same piece of silicon. In the Cell, it's different. It's a multi-core design, but the big difference is that the Cell has one kind of supervisor core, which is basically just a stripped-down PowerPC chip, and then eight specialized cores called synergistic processing units, or just SPUs.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually full cores, but they're different from a typical CPU core because they're specialized for computational programming. So if you think about, you know, you have the vector processing units like AlphaVec and MMX and those sorts of things that you have on traditional processors. Well, these SPUs are kind of like those, except they've been extended to have a full range of instructions on them. So they're not just piggybacking off of a traditional CPU. They actually have the full instruction set.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, these chips don't have all the capabilities of a full chip, but they're not limited as just a straight vector processor. And what that gives you is just really huge multimedia support, because that's basically what we buy vector processors for. MMX and AlphaVec is for doing multimedia processing, and so. So these are specialized for that. So the Cell processor has one primary core, and then it has eight SPUs attached.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them, I believe they all run at 3.4 gigahertz. So they're screaming fast.
So is it both the PowerPC part, the stripped-down PowerPC part, and the SPUs are running at that high speed?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, so it sounds like what you're telling me, like if I bought a dual-core Intel, you know, the Linux kernel would recognize and be access those immediately, both those cores, right? But in this case, it won't.
Right, that's correct, because, you know, for like Linux, you have to have each core has to be able to support share virtual memory and support preemptive multitasking and that sort of thing, so it can switch processes correctly. Since these chips are specialized for multimedia, they don't have all that extra stuff on them. So basically, they're owned by one process at a time, and you actually have to write specialized code for each of these cores to run on. You can't just take a standard out-of-the-box program and compile it for these processing units. You actually have to write special code to take care of that.
So, let me, you know, just an aside now, if I compare, say, a 3.4 gigahertz cell and a 3.4 gigahertz Pentium, are the programs, let's say I'm not a specialized C programmer, is my Linux background going to operate the same speed between those two processor types?
You're probably going to get less speed out of the cell in that case, because...
Why would that be?
Well, the PowerPC which ships on it is actually a little bit stripped down, so it doesn't have all of the optimizations that are in a standard PowerPC chip.
Uh-huh.
But as I said, in order to get the eight synergistic cores working, they have to have specialized code to run on those.
Mm-hmm.
So what you wind up with is if you don't have any programs that know how to use your SPUs, then you wind up with just a PowerPC that doesn't work as well as most of them.
That's interesting, you know, because a lot of hackers have an extensive knowledge of C. So, I mean, it sounds like they could still get some good mileage out of this.
Yeah, especially if you want to do any sort of scientific programming. That's actually where my article that I wrote for IBM kind of focus on is doing scientific processing on those specialized processors.
You know, what I think of is I remember there was this hacker webpage, and what the guy did was he made a lookup of all the hash values that passwords could possibly link to.
Mm.
Now, if somebody wanted to, like, generate a table like that really quickly, would he, like, load into the SPUs, you know, a bunch of seed numbers, and then channel them all together and actually do, like, eight calculations at a time that way? Is that how it would work? Yeah?
It's kind of interesting because you actually have to explicitly code all memory moves from and to main memory on the cell, which is unusual because usually you just access it directly. But yeah, I mean, basically you do is you load it in, load in the code into each of the eight processors and go through and calculate all of your hashes simultaneously.
That's really amazing. So it'd be a fast computer for a typical desktop user, but it'd be even better for a more knowledgeable programmer.
Yes.
To wrap up.
Definitely.
That's amazing.
And also, it's possible that in the future, because the cell is such a different technology, there's not a whole lot of people developing for it at the beginning. So it's possible as time goes on, we'll have more apps come out that have specialized cell extensions.
Yeah.
You're already seeing that with a bunch of the at-home type apps, like Folding at Home, and I believe Einstein at Home is trying to work on a PlayStation a cell version, and a bunch of those kind of do-it-at-home scientific apps are working on cell extensions.
You know, I wonder if a more mainstream application, such as a spreadsheet, could take advantage of all those SPUs. You know, because that's a calculation-intensive application, right?
You probably could if you, I mean, because most spreadsheets aren't really that calculation-intensive.
Uh-huh.
You know, you've got about, you know, 30, 100, maybe 1,000 calculations to do. The cell really shines when you have, you know, a couple million.
Yeah,
and which is why it's kind of specialized for graphics. In fact, kind of what I kind of heard from the rumor mill is that the first design of the PlayStation 3 was actually going to have two cell processors, and they were going to simply, rather than have a graphics processor, they're just going to use a cell in its place. And the reason that they chunked that design was simply because there's a whole stack of development work that goes along with making a video card, a video port, and making all the libraries that go with it. So they just went ahead and went with the standard one rather than trying to build it themselves. But multimedia processing is really what the cell is built for.
That's
in fact,
amazing.
One of the reasons for the architecture is because Intel has 8 core processors now, or is working on them in the lab. I don't think they're out yet. But the difference is that those run really hot because each core is a full processor. But the cell, since each core are these specialized multimedia units, the cell actually runs really cool. So you don't have to have like a gargantuan fan sitting on your TV. Or whatever sort of multimedia device you
want. So this would really like advantage, like, you know, a media company or an animation company, or perhaps a company that needed to run Beowulf clusters, like for weather forecasting or something.
Weather forecasting would be great. Animation rendering, I think, would be fantastic.
Do you know? Because I've seen pictures in Linux Journal of the render form used by the Shrek movies. Do you know of any actual installations where people have replaced render forms with all cell processors?
I'm not, and I think the reason is because no one's actually done the development work to move a lot of these rendering platforms to use the cell specific extensions.
You know, I heard that Toshiba released a prototype motherboard, but that no one ever came out with a regular standardized consumer level motherboard centered around the cell. Is there a reason for that, and have there been industrial, say, blade server style motherboards made with the cell?
Yeah, there's been a lot of blade servers made with the cell.
Yeah.
I think that before the PlayStation 3 came out, most of the people using the cell were on some sort of IBM blades, or there's another company making blades that I forget the name right now. So actually, besides the PS3, most cells right now are running on blades.
So this could really replace a person looking to change home computers. They could actually get this, get a PS3 and use it as a home computer.
Yeah, you can use it as a regular Linux box. I actually did that for a while, although I have a really, really crappy TV, so it didn't work out as well as it would for other people. But.
Well, you know, I know it comes with a Blu-ray, the PS3, so I would assume you would need to get, you know, like a HDTV monitor.
You want to.
Yeah. But now, in your case, you don't. You know,
I'm a cheap bastard, so, you know.
So much.
I don't know. Yeah.
So how do you connect to it, then? Do you connect to it, like, just with the TV set, or do you tunnel into it somehow?
No, I connect direct to my TV set. And, you know, I think Sony engineers would probably be crying in their beer if they saw the kind of setup I had for it. If I actually want to see a full desktop, I usually run an external into it that way.
Yeah, so you'd log in via KDM or something.
Exactly.
So it's interesting because I heard these game consoles are sold at a slight loss by the big companies who make them. You know, because they want to get them out and they expect to recoup money on licensing fees. Like for the individual games, so I'm wondering if like the actual hardware of the PS3 is actually worth more than what you have to buy it for.
it probably is. And Sony did several things to try to shave off some dimes off of it. For instance, the cells that come on the PS3, instead of having 8 SPU cores, they actually have 7. And the reason they did that is that, you know, when you go into manufacturing, some of your chips will be slightly defective, and some of them will be, you know, even more defective. And so what they did is they basically said, we're going to manufacture these, but we're going to only throw out chips if they have 2 defective SPUs.
Really?
They're going to keep them if they have 1, and if they manage to get all 8, we'll just disable one of them.
You know, that's an amazing thing. I just don't know how to respond to that. You know, because I know that the CPUs are actually made in mass, and that there's a quality assurance, and sometimes they know that some can operate at a certain speed, others can't. Like, I've read that Intel's, they rate the speed of a batch somehow.
Yeah.
You know, but in this case, they're actually rating how many of the SPUs are fully functional.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting what they do in engineering, but that's why I'm a software guy, not a hardware guy.
So, what kind of Linux do you prefer, John?
I usually stick with Red Hat, just because that's kind of what I grew up on.
Now, I'm a Debian guy, and I did read that some people got Debian Linux up and working. What are the different Linuxes that are known to work with the PS3?
Well, the main one that they got, the first one they got running on PS3 was Yellow Dog. And they've been kind of the staple PowerPC vendor for a long time. But because Sony actually paid them to do all the porting legwork to get Yellow Dog up and running on the PS3, which I thought was kind of interesting, kind of showing Sony's commitment to Linux on the PS3.
Yeah, you know, that is a lot of commitment from them. Has any non-Linux operating systems been made to work on this platform? Perhaps
I've heard NetBSD.
NetBSD?
Yeah, but I've never tried it myself.
Yeah. So, you know, I know that Macintosh, Apple released, used to have a PowerPC computer before they switched to Intel's, but they've made no attempt?
Nope. In fact, that was one thing that I was a bit disappointed at, because I thought that would have been a great move for Apple, because their PCs are so heavily multimedia oriented.
Yeah.
That the cell would have been a natural fit, going from PowerPC to the cell, because it doesn't require any rewrite of any application code. But they could have used the SPUs for doing a lot of their QuickTime graphics processing.
That would have been great. They probably missed the boat on this one. A lot of our listeners at Hacker Public Radio are heavily free software people. And some of them have said that they've had problems with Sony because they do a lot of patenting and a lot of, you know, I don't know if closed source is the right word, but it's certainly closed architecture.
Right.
How does this wash with you?
As far as hardware goes, I don't have much of an opinion on it one way or another. I'm a big free software fan myself. My book I released under the GNU free documentation license. I try at the place I work. We try to as large parts of the software we develop as we can, we try to open source. But you know, the main thing that my main disagreement with Sony is when they started putting those rootkits on. I think they were putting rootkits on CDs or something like that.
Yeah, that was a real debacle.
Yeah, that went way too far.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, one of the things that people complain about is that they've locked the graphics processor on the cell.
Uh-huh.
So that you can't use any of the graphics processor's 3D capabilities.
Yeah, but I did want to ask you about the graphics processor, because I understand it's like a really, and correct me if I'm wrong, that is like a really advanced, I believe NVIDIA, but I'm not sure, and that some people have used the actual video card for photography calculations. Do you know anything about that?
I'm not familiar with any of that, although I wouldn't be surprised. There's actually a company called RapidMind,
uh-huh.
and they have this software development kit that I believe, haven't looked at it as closely as I'd like, allows you to use a lot of these, you know, alternate execution environments such as graphics cards, SPUs, and that sort of thing fairly easily from within a C++ environment.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't be surprised if someone has used that in conjunction with something like RapidMind that makes it pretty easy to write stuff to work on specialized processors. But as far as on the PlayStation 3 itself, Sony's locked that card down pretty hard, so you actually can't access it from Linux except through a frame buffer.
Hmm. So that must have been, if anything that people know about that must have done, used that technique. That must be very advanced. Well, I mean, before we wrap things up, John, is there anything I should have asked you?
I think we covered most of the basics, especially for non-programmers. There's a lot of interesting stuff as well when you get into the actual individual programming on it. But anyone who's interested in that can also check out my articles on IBM DeveloperWorks.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of interesting, the way I got into it is because I actually bought, you know, we were talking about Macs, I actually bought a Mac, and I was interested in learning to program it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was disappointed because I got a laptop in there, 32-bit, and I wanted to do the 64-bit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, someone told me that, the cell was a 64-bit PowerPC processor.
And is it?
It turns out they actually have a simulator available for the cell. So before it even came out, I was able to do some practice programming on it via a simulator that IBM has. They still produce it.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually quite an interesting little thing, because it actually can... It literally mimics the hardware exactly. So like it mimics the actual the cycles go through, so you can actually know how many cycles your program is taking just by running it on a simulator.
That sounds very intense, and it also makes me wonder if maybe if somebody actually set this up as a home computer, if they could maybe run a virtualization environment and be able to run their old favorite Windows apps in that way.
That's very possible.
Yes.
Not entirely sure on all the details on that, but that's very possible.
Well, look, John, I really want to thank you for coming on Hacker Public Radio, because, you know, I do web searches on this topic, and there just doesn't seem to be enough interesting information out there. So I hope this, you know, really enlightens the listenership. Thank you again.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.